Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
That's fucking minging, though.
It's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome to another edition of the Roker Report podcast in association with Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. We are just post final whistle at the whole game. We've drawn 1-1. Another drab performance, really. Not the most inspiring game, but hopefully to drag some life out of it. I'm joined today by Chris Wynn. How you doing, Chris?
I don't think you can have much luck dragging life out of that game from me, but I'll try.
Okay, well, in that case, I'm looking to you, John. John Stacey, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm full of life.
Always full of life, mate. Okay, so we'll crack straight on with it then. So a bit of an impromptu game, one of those short notice rearranged ones that you tend to see in the Sunday League. But nonetheless, we played at home to second in the league, Hull City, who themselves aren't on a particularly brilliant run. And the team, by and large, unchanged. A bit of shuffling at the back. I think McFadzean come in for Flanagan and Sanderson moved into centre-back and McFadzean then moved out to left-back. I'll start with you, Chris. Were there any surprises in that for you, given how flat the 0-0 against Northampton was? And on paper, at least, our bench looked pretty strong.
Yeah. I mean, put in the this week's preview for the whole game, I said I just had a feeling that after the Northampton game, where we were so poor up front, and it wasn't just... And if he'd watched videos of Sunderland games this season, he'd have seen that it wasn't a one-off. That's how we've attacked this season. And I put in the preview that I just thought, being a proactive manager, like, you know, everyone's talking about, he changed something up. And I don't know, that, dare I say it, it smacked a Parky where he just went in and tried the same thing again. And I mean, after watching the Northampton game, why would you go in and try the same thing again up front? It just makes no sense, especially with all those attacking players on the bench. So I just thought he would change something up front. At the back, I don't know if anything's come out about Flanagan, but we'll get into it. But I like Sanderson at the back. We'll talk about him more, I'm sure. Mm. I wasn't too surprised or that fussed about the changes at the back, but just amazed he didn't change anything up top.
Yeah, I was quite surprised. Obviously, we don't know what's gone on behind the scenes in terms of players' fitness, you know, how any of those positive COVID tests, how those guys have recovered. But majority of people who were out on the pitch today would have had at least some sort of training for the last week or so. What about you, John? Were you surprised to see a by and large unchanged starting 11?
Yeah, I think I'll echo Chris, really. I think I'm not surprised because I think I'm still in Parky mode. I think I need a bit more time to get used to the fact that Parky's not manager. But at the same time, I did harbour more hope than usual that there would be some changes because that game was horrendous. Mm. You know, so it needed shifting around somewhere. I actually kind of thought to myself that he would change the midfield because I just thought that the three of Power, Scowen and Ledbetter were just ineffective against Northampton. They were individually okay in different parts, but I thought they were just non-existent as a team and I thought they needed a bit more attack mind. So I thought maybe Embleton would get a game, maybe a bit deeper than he normally plays, but maybe Embleton would get a game. Or maybe they'd bring Gooch in, but... No, it was the same old, except for that shift at the back because of potentially what we think might be an injury or a COVID positive or something that Flanagan's got.
Yeah, so. Possibly. So into the game itself then, and before we kind of go into the highlights, that what few highlights there were, I preempted you a little bit and said that I was going to ask for your three-word reviews of to kind of summarise what you've just watched. So John, I'll come to you first.
I was trying to think of something really creative really quickly, but I think I'm just going to go with something really obvious and miss out an ah and just say we need goal scorer. So let's go with that one for
three. Or goal scorers. You could make that into a sentence with plurals.
Yeah, Yeah, we need goal scorers. It'd be nice. Yeah, somebody who can score more. I mean, I think, look, everybody's going to say, you know, there's going to be a few people out there who go, look, White's got double figures. You know, yes, he has bad games and stuff, but he scores goals. And, you know, he has a couple of good games and he does play all right every now and then, but he's not right for getting us promoted as a number nine up top. It's as simple as that. We just need somebody else. And, you know, you look at the bench and, you know, on paper, they're strong, you know, experienced players. But we know that Graham, O'Brien, they're just not going to cut it either in that role. Yeah, I mean, I was chatting to my dad, actually, my old man, and I was texting him during the game and he was saying that he hopes Greg comes back fit and LJ gets the best out of him. I just think we need something else up there. You know, it's almost like you've got to kind of hope that he gets the best out of Greg, because four or five games, if Greg gets a run in the team and he's played four or five games, he's not scoring, is that too late? Because by the time he's back, you know, transfer window's finished. So
it's a bit too late then.
Yeah, do you try Curry? I don't know. It's one of those things. We just need something up top.
Yeah, so we need goal scorers. I think all three of ours are going to be along the same sort of lines, Chris, but I'll come to you next. What were your three words to surmise that this evening?
I was bored. second half, it was honest. I was doing anything else but kind of watching the game was kind of secondary to doing to thinking about
anything.
I had to stop myself from doing other things. To try and kind of watch the match in the second, especially second half. I mean, first half was a bit more interesting, but it was more interesting in the fact that we were trying to match Hull up, and I actually thought Hull were impressive. I was quite impressed with Hull first half an hour, 35 minutes. I thought they were the better side. We came into it a bit more towards the last 10 minutes of the second half, but interestingly, it was only when Eves went off injured, I thought he was showing Charlie Wake out to play as a target man.
Yeah.
Brilliant performance, held it up well, turned on the ball, gave it easy, won headers in the box. I mean, imagine that. Imagine having a striker, a big striker winning headers in the box. Amazing. Yeah. But it just showed what it can be achieved when you've got actually an 11th player up front.
Yeah.
Rather than that being a man down by someone who just is so ineffective, he might as well not be there. Second half was just painful, absolutely painful to watch. So. Yeah.
I think the last time we had a number nine we could rely on to hold the ball up and score goals was Niall Quinn, wasn't it?
Yeah. Since then, he's been manager, chairman, bought the club, sold the club.
Died, been reborn.
That's how long it's been. Yeah, so my three words, because I are comfortable without threatening, because I did think we were, over the course of the whole game, I did think we were fairly comfortable. I don't think either team looked like they were necessarily going to win it. But again, we didn't really threaten. We didn't look like we were going to go on and win the game if there was to be a winner.
I think we were more comfortable than we should have been. I think Hull on paper, and especially with the players they've got, I don't know whether it's the system they're playing or whether Grant McCann isn't quite perhaps right for them. I'm not sure. But, you know, you look at their starting 11, I thought they'd trouble us a lot more than they did. And even when Eves went off, yes, you know, I agree with Chris, and McGuinness come on and did nothing. Mm. But McGuinness coming on actually worried me at the start, because I remember him being a decent player. So, you know, it's like they've got a lot of depth, they've got decent players, they've got young players, and I feel like with a decent manager, they'd have destroyed us, or a decent setup to destroy us.
Well, McGuinness did his hamstring at the beginning of December and he wasn't supposed to be back till February. So I think he's come back early from his hamstring injury, but he didn't look fit when he came on. I mean, the difference between...
He had COVID, didn't he?
He's had COVID as well, yeah.
He had COVID as well. He lost quite a lot of weight, didn't he? I mean, it just showed the difference. I mean, they had similar problems when McGuinness came on to when Eves went off as what we had, just having White up front. Not having that focal point up front, you can only get so far with a ball before it all breaks down, and that's what kept happening to us.
And the thing for me, just a final bit before we go into the bit more detail on the game, is that people defend Wyke and say he doesn't get the service, he doesn't get this, he doesn't get that. I wouldn't say the service into Tom Eves was particularly excellent today. He made a lot for himself. His movement inside the box, that header that he hit the crossbar with, was all his own movement. It wasn't a superb ball necessarily.
But the best part of Eves' game was when he was getting those passes that were essentially too short for him in the middle of our half, but he was muscling his way past our kind of right or Sanderson. He was actually winning the ball, then turning and giving it in good positions. Whereas Wyke just doesn't give us that. He'll never come hunting for it, win it, play it easy, and he'll never kind of, for his size, he never muscles anybody off the ball. He always seems to get knocked over. It's just the whole Charlie Wyke thing is just bizarre to me.
Yeah, Tom Eves hung on to the fullbacks as well, any chance he got.
Yeah.
You know, that's 101 as a big man up front. You don't stand next to your centre-backs if your wingers have got the ball. You stand next to the full-back, so you're bigger than the man that's jumping up with a header for you. Mm. And Charlie Wyke is always man-marked by the biggest geezer on the pitch, and he's always out-muscled, and he just can't seem to get away from them. Or if he isn't trying to get away from them, why isn't he trying to get away from them? It's like they're stuck to him like glue, and it's shocking.
Yeah. Well, I could talk for the next half an hour about Charlie Wyke and what I think of him. Chris knows full well what my thoughts are on Charlie Wyke. Yeah, let's not. Because the game wasn't actually that old before there were talking points. And Lee Burge went kind of from the sublime to the ridiculous. I thought he was brilliant in that save where he got hurt. It was good anticipation, good bravery against Wilk. But then, no more than a few moments later, dropped a clanger by spilling what looked like a very innocuous cross from George Honeyman from a free kick. Spilled it straight to the feet of Reece Burke, and lo and behold, we're 1-0 down after a handful of minutes. John, I'm going to come to you as goalkeepers union. Any excuse for Burge there, or is that something to label as what we would call an unforced error?
Well, I was trying to think of an excuse, and obviously you could use the eye thing and say that he was a bit sort of, I don't know, just disjointed, semi-concussed, whatever you want to call it. But if we scratch that out completely and we just talk about it as an incident on its own, an isolated incident, forgetting that, what he's looking to do, just looking on the replay, is he's trying to get in between him and the nearest attacking player. So he's trying to get his body in the way whilst also picking up the ball. This is a thing in modern goalkeepers. There's a few things in modern goalkeepers where they're just trying to do more than they actually need to do. You know, it's the whole punching versus catching thing again. And there's all sorts of other nuances that keepers get involved with these days, you know, as sweeper keepers. But for me, looking at what he was doing in his eyes on the ball, I was thinking, he needed to actually get to the ball before anyone else, and he's waiting for it to come to him. And he's moved away from it to get in between him and the attacker. And I'm just thinking, yeah, I don't know what's going through his head. So, yeah, if he wasn't concussed, then it was a shocker, a proper shocker. And certainly knocked me down a few points on the score and the rating. So,
yeah. Same.
Apart from that, you know, he did the save that got him injured. He made another flap. And he made it look worse than it was, but there was a shot or a cross and he flapped at it and it ended up being a free kick anyway. As soon as that happened with Wilkes, he was out of it. He was out of sorts and didn't look like half the player he is, which isn't always that great of a keeper anyway. So
yeah, I think it definitely affected him, and it wasn't surprised necessarily to see him come off at half time.
No.
But we didn't have an awful lot of time to stew on that, because again, kind of almost from nowhere, we'd equalised. A quick free kick from Grant Leadbitter took pretty much everybody bar Jack Diamond by surprise. Just kind of clipped it into the channel. It didn't look like Diamond was going to get there. All of a sudden, he did get there. And he's just kind of hoyed a high ball, looping ball back across goal. And surprisingly, Aidan McGeady was on the end of it to head it back across goal. And like I said, from nowhere, we're back to 1-1. So Chris, whilst... for me, obviously, we'll take it. I think we were fortunate for some very, very poor defending there from Hull, probably more so than anything else. What do you think?
Yeah, our goal made me laugh, to be honest. When I was actually watching the game, I actually laughed a bit, crying out loud. But I just think it's almost perfect symbolism of us going forward, of our attacking play. It was like, you know, Leadbitter spotted Diamond, good vision. But even then, he still nearly overplayed the pass. And it nearly went out for a goal kick. Diamond kind of had to wait for it to drop nicely for him before it went out for a goal kick. And then just thought, I've just got to hook it anywhere I can. And then Aidan McGeady ran up and headed it in, which, I mean, you know, the goal kind of summed up. It's just our kind of ad hoc, let's just keep pumping it up in the air in the box. And, you know, it might hit someone or someone might head it and it might go in. It's just, it's kind of hit and hope. It's hope for the best. And that's how we scored. It kind of felt like a strange goal.
Yeah, it was a strange one. I was almost had to double take that it had even gone in. And it wasn't until we saw the replays that actually McGeady had lost Honeyman, which was nice. So Honeyman's still doing his work for us, despite not being at the club. But I was surprised that the ball was in the air for that long, John. I'm surprised that none of the whole defenders actually bothered to make an attempt to try and win the ball. Because, you know, Aidan McGeady's not exactly a towering 6'4" centre half to get up there and win a floated ball in.
Yeah, I think they were a bit static. They weren't expecting what was happening. It sort of like Chris said, they were probably setting up and still thinking about what was going to come their way because it was taken quickly. But no, I think Aiden's gone and got like a bit of pace on his run. So he's got a bit of sort of momentum. And I think any centre-back or anyone who's tall and got up for a header against someone who's smaller than them, if you're flat-footed, they can still get above you. So
I can vouch for that.
The funniest thing about the goal for me was the commentators. When it went in, they both went, "Oh, it's gone in." And just burst out laughing.
I think that summed up what everybody was thinking at the time.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, the keeper was just as shocked as everybody else. He was stood there and he was looking around and he was thinking, "How's that gone in?" And I've been there before, you know, where you think you're positioned well, you think your defenders should do a job because they should be more prepared, but actually you were a bit flat-footed as well, and you're looking in your bottom corner thinking, "How's that gone in?" when it's someone who never scores headers, and it's just one of them. You just got to stick your hands up and go, "Well, let's just crack on with the game."
I was thinking the same as you, John. I thought, how has the keeper not even made an attempt for that? Because it seemed like it wasn't too far away from him. And there was a camera angle from behind McGeady, and actually, he put it so far in the corner. When I saw that angle, I actually thought, I didn't have much of a chance, really, the keeper.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, he probably would have seen it a bit late as well, because McGeady kind of looped the header over one of the centre halves. Mm. So it was almost directly in front of where it actually went in the goal.
Yeah. Whether he meant to do that or not, I don't know.
It doesn't matter. It went in, didn't it? We'll take it. I said another kind of talking point. Well, is it a talking point? I guess we're about to find out. So about 10 minutes from the end, Diamond takes advantage from Hull sleeping yet again and colliding with the keeper. Now, having looked back at it, it's actually a very good tackle, or the defender's won the ball. But my opinion is that he's nudged the ball past and beyond the keeper, and then the keeper has clattered Diamond to prevent him actually getting the other side and potentially having a tap in an open goal. Now, for me, if there's a VAR decision or something like that, the referee brings that back, and it might not be a red card, or I think it was just outside the box, but he certainly brings that back for a free kick, and that actually should have been a lot better a chance than it ended up being.
Mm.
John, did you think anything different of that? What were your thoughts at the time?
No, it's definitely that. I mean, it's League One refereeing, isn't it? It's like it's almost like they've lost track of how to implement the rules, because the guy's got a tackle in, but he's not touched Diamond. The keeper's took Diamond out because Diamond, like you said, the guy's put the tackle in, great tackle. If the keeper's nowhere to be seen, Diamond runs onto that. He doesn't go anywhere because it's going towards the side of the pitch or the corner. It probably went out for a throw. The keeper's there. He's come all the way out. It's a mistake by the keeper. How many times do you see a mistake by the keeper in the Premier League punished? And whether it's VAR or not, I think the Premier League ref would have picked that up and given them a free kick. Let's sort of play devil's advocate with everybody that's probably fuming about that situation. I actually just think it's a yeller, because the fact that the defender got the ball away, the referee's going to look at that. And if they are going to play the game properly, they'll give us a free kick and give the keeper a yeller. Mm. And Diamond would probably have been all right with that, a bit aggrieved that obviously he didn't get a chance to run onto the ball, but he was nowhere near the ball. The defender made a great tackle, do you know what I mean? The fact that the keeper came flying out, smashed him to bits, play carried on like nothing happened. It was like, come on, you know, this is absolutely ridiculous. You can make mistakes and still give free kicks. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like the referee shouldn't stand there and go, "Oh, we didn't mean to do it, so it's okay." Mm. Like, I'm sorry, not in that instance at all. He could have run on to get the ball, like you say. It's
I think for me, if that's not a goalkeeper and that's two outfield players, it's a free kick and a yellow card all day long.
Yeah.
And you picked up on the standard of refereeing, John, and there was quite a bit of fume in the group chat and on social media as well directly after the game about the ref. So Chris, what were your thoughts on the refereeing performance? Because I don't necessarily share the rage that seems to have been flying around after that game.
Nah,
it's because you're used to it.
It's not one of them where we'll finish the game and I'm thinking, "Oh, that ref cost us 2 points or cost us, you know, whatever." I don't have any of those feelings after the game. I mean, I'm with John on that one with Diamond. It was a free kick, but I've seen those not given as well at the same time. I don't think it was like 100% nailed on. I do think it should have been a free kick. I also think, actually, I only saw it briefly, but I think there was a hint of offside in their goal. If you look before the free kick was just before the free kick was played.
Yeah.
One of their front men looked slightly offside, but I only saw they didn't have any replay on it, which I thought they should have, but I thought there was that. But yeah, I'm the same as you, Bum. I didn't have a feeling that would have been robbed. Referees, I think today's was similar to what we see every week. I come away from all of the games thinking they're poor, but actually generally they're poor for both sides. And I thought, actually, a couple of times we got away with stuff tonight.
Yeah.
So I thought he was crap for both teams, to be honest.
Which is makes it fair, I guess, if nothing else. You can't really feel aggrieved. So the rest of that half kind of petered out. I think the best thing that could have possibly happened for Sunderland in the last bit of that first half was Eves pulling his calf, because he was causing some problems, particularly for McFadzean and Sanderson. So he comes off, Josh McGuinness comes on, and that takes us through into half-time, really. And half-time is 1-1, but really we should have been 2-1 down with the chances that Tom Eves had. Mm. Some interesting changes at half-time. Matthews for Burge, perhaps not that shocking if he was struggling with his eye. But Chris Gooch for McLaughlin and Power going to right back. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if, I don't know if it was tactical or not. I mean, it was, you know, McLaughlin had, he had a kind of indifferent first half. He looked good at times, one-on-one with Wilkes, and he got done a few times. So it was kind of 50-50 there. I don't see why Power was going to make that any better at right back. Maybe he just thinks Power was better on the ball. Because actually one thing I did notice from McLaughlin first half, and I just looking at my notes, what I was thinking at the time was, when he went forward, his crossing was awful. Mm. He seemed to get, like, support Diamond okay, get there, and then when he got there and Diamond gave him it, he just kicked it out of play, or kicked it straight at the keeper, or kicked it straight at the first man. So there was no point in him doing all that running, because all he was doing was wasting his time when he got there. Mm. Maybe that was his thinking of Power might be actually more effective if he does all that running on the right hand side. And maybe McLaughlin was knackered, I don't know. But it was a bit of a strange one to go with Power.
I think Wilkes was slightly getting the upper hand of McLaughlin as well. You know, the little kind of niggle that they had where McLaughlin kind of pulled his boot and stopped him from running. You could tell that there was kind of some shenanigans going on there. And Wilkes was probably their biggest threat. So, yeah, not surprised. More surprised at who actually ended up going at right back. And the second half, you know, I thought the first 15 minutes of the second half was all Sunderland, without really creating anything, apart from that one brilliant cross that Gooch put in, which did deserved a lot, should have had a lot better from it, and overlapping runs from Max Power at right back as well, opening up the chance to get that cross in, which was amusing. So that was probably the only chance until my favourite player, old Chazza, failed to direct the ball in to an empty net from 3 yards. And I am deliberately being a little facetious there, John, but should he have done better with that?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it's not just me then.
No point lingering on it. We don't want to talk about it all night, but yeah, you should have put that in. I mean, it looked like it bounced up like... It was one of them again where you're trying to find an excuse and it looked like it bounced up perfectly. I looked at the replay and I was like, you can't even say it was a bobble. You can't even say it wasn't at the right height. You can't even say it was too fast for him. It was a massive, massive indictment of him not being in the right position, not being... ready on his toes, whatever you want to call it, real basic number 9 stuff. He should have put it in.
It just doesn't seem to know how to go for the ball,
how to play football.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, yeah. We'll just go one further and go for that.
I'm out of excuses for him. I'll accept that we're unanimously agreed that he should have done better with that, and he's rubbish.
Yeah.
75 minutes. Maguire, Edmonton and Graham come on for Diamond, Wike and McGeady. And for me, Chris, I'll come to you with this. For me, though, it was quite refreshing to see a Sunderland manager not try and shut up shop and play for the draw in the last 15 minutes of a game. Like I say, quite refreshing for me. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it was. I was sitting there. It was kind of one of those, like I said, I was trying not to do something else in the second half. So when this change came, I was sitting there rubbing my hands thinking, yes, right, triple substitution, right, we're in business here. And nothing changed.
It almost made the game worse, didn't it?
It was just as, well, nothing changed. It was exactly the same flat game before the subs as it was after. Your subs are supposed to get a bit of freshness, get a bit of energy, and there was nothing. Embleton tried to find... I saw him kind of darting from one side to the other when Ledbetter had the ball, but we weren't playing those passes down the middle. We were playing it out wide all the time.
Going out wide again.
They all reverted to type and were going out wide, and I was like, play a pass through the middle, we might actually get somewhere. Mm. But yeah, I mean, Graham hardly had a touch, and Maguire just looks so unfit. I don't know if it's just me, but he looks massive and unfit, and I've got that much confidence in Maguire at the minute.
He's anonymous at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, he just doesn't look much fit, but didn't change anything. But I mean, at least he tried something, but sometimes that'll come off.
Yeah. And that was pretty much it, with the exception of probably at the time in live real time, half a penalty shape on Leadbitter in the last 10 minutes. So I don't know about you two, but I was screaming for it at the time. But, you know, one of the good things about being on Sky for a change is you get the replays, you get the alternative camera angles. And actually, John, it was a pretty decent tackle in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was inch perfect. It was scarily perfect. It was one of them, it could go massively wrong. And yeah, I was the same. I thought Leadbitter sort of went down. Leadbitter goes down like a sack of spuds quite a bit. And he wins a lot of free kicks in different areas. And you know they're not free kicks, but he wins them. And that's fair. You know, it's a tactic. It's a way to do things. But yeah, he theatrically kind of flung himself to the ground. And yeah, the replay served Malik Wilkes well in the end because it was a great tackle.
Yeah. And then from there, like I say, the game petered out. There was one other moment, which I'll be honest, I did have my heart in my mouth, was when Wilkes kind of cross-come shot, bounced up, and it looked like it, for a split second it almost might have looped over Remy Matthews, and given his track record, there was a bit of a heart in mouth moment, but it wasn't to be. And that's how it finished, 1-1. You know, with Charlton and Ipswich losing, Peterborough and Lincoln drawing, it's another opportunity to close the gap that's not been taken. It's frustrating, and actually we don't have as many games in hand as we thought we might have had on everybody when we started cancelling games because of COVID. So it's going to be a hard winter and spring, I think, if we're going to salvage anything from this season. But we'll come on to the ratings. That's what we're here for. I'm going to start off. I'm going to kick off with Lee Burge. I gave him a 4. I know you said earlier, John, that you also had him as a 4.
Yeah,
you know, he did pull off a couple of decent saves, but you can't score any higher than a 4 if you gifted them a goal. Yeah, it's a 4 for me. Chris, Conor McLaughlin.
Conor McLaughlin, I had as a 5. I thought, like I kind of touched on when we're talking about the game, I thought at times he looked like he just got done, like Wilkes had him. And then at other times you thought, oh, okay, he's doing a good job there. It was kind of, you know, it was to and fro. But if it was just that and he was decent on the ball when he went forward, he might have slipped into a 6. But every time he went forward, he gave it away. So he stuck at a 5.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair enough. Anything different for you there, John?
No, I put a 5 as well, actually. Genius.
Yeah. Okay, well, you can take Bailey Wright then.
So first half, half time, I gave him a 5, but I moved him up to a 6. I thought he worked pretty hard. Standard Bailey Wright performance, nothing fancy. He got a dodgy yellow in the first half. That's why I dropped him down to a 5. But I say dodgy yellow, it just seemed like he was a bit frustrated. Mm. And at times he was, you know, genuinely frustrated because of everything going on around him and in front of him like normal. But no, it was a solid performance, 6 for me in the end.
Yeah. No, I've got him as a 6 as well, and I'm going to carry on and take Deion Sanderson, who I thought was very, very good on the whole. I've given him a 7. I'm still not convinced he's a centre back. I'm in my mind, I'm adamant he's a right back and a very, very good right back. I think his one-on-one defending is absolutely superb, and that was highlighted, I think, just towards the end. There was kind of a one-on-one he had. Can't remember who it was with, but he held him up perfectly and got a toe in and one possession back. The problem I've got with him is that he doesn't seem to be able to mark. You know, he did struggle with the movement of Tom Eaves, and there was the couple of times where he got in, he just kind of drifted off the back of him, which you can get away with a little bit as a right back. You can't get away with it as a centre back, but nevertheless, on the ball, he was decent. His one-on-one defending was very, very good. So I've got him as a 7.
Yeah.
Either of you two got anything different for that?
I just wanted to say on Sanderson, I mean, I gave him a 6, but I just think he looks so classy. I think I mean, if you think as well, I mean, this is what, I think he's played about, like, this is like his 20th senior game or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he's even played 20 games. I think he played 10 for Cardiff or something, and he's played a handful for us. And just to be that good, and I think as he gets older, he's going to be a top-class centre-half. I think he's going to grow into a top-class centre-half. Like you said, he might be better at right-back now just because of how young he is and how pace he is, but I mean, I like his pace. I like how he is on the ball. I like his shoes. I just like everything about him. You know, it's just he just looks a class apart, and I just think he's going to get better and better if we keep him in the team.
Yeah, yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. So sticking with you then, Chris, Mr. McFadzean.
5, similar to McLaughlin, but he was possibly a bit worse than McLaughlin slightly, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt of 5. Just anonymous, really.
Yeah,
he didn't get kind of skinned down the right, our left all the time, but same time, nothing going forward, and we looked kind of vulnerable on either flank. So down as a 5.
The one thing I would say about him is he was almost exclusively on his own on that left-hand side, with McGeady constantly drifting in into the centre. But yeah, you're right. Nothing really spectacular at either end of the pitch, but equally nothing drastic either. Mm. So we're going to move into the midfield. And John, you've got Josh Scoen.
I went for a six. I like Josh Scoen. I think there's a player in him. And again, I was sort of chatting beforehand, before coming on, and yeah, I think he would do better and get higher scores if he was with partners that suited his style of play. But he sort of grows into games sometimes. He starts quite poorly sometimes, and then he grows into them. And I think, but he's got a skill. He's got something about him. I just think, yeah, nothing to sort of say he made any mistakes. His movement was good. A few decent passes. He's got a lot of energy. So you know, you can't hammer him, but then should we be asking more from him? So six for me.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I rated Scoen a little bit higher, actually. I had him as a seven. I thought he was very, very good. I thought he did a lot of the dirty work that goes unnoticed by many. I think he won the ball back very well and recycled it when he needed to. And I don't remember too many times where he actually gave it away unnecessarily. So I had him as one of the better ones today. I had him as a seven. And I'll pick up Grant Leadbitter and just simply a six. I don't think he, you know, he played the ball in for the goal. I don't think he really did anything else, really. So yeah, six. And we'll move on to Max Power with you, Chris.
Yeah, I had just on Leadbitter quickly, I had him down as a five. I thought he was poor today, Leadbitter.
I had him as a four. I thought he was poor today.
Moved on too soon.
Max Power, I had in midfield, I had him down as a four. I thought he was awful first half. Just did not keep the ball, did not keep possession for us. Tried to play worldies every time he got it, and he hasn't got the capability of doing it or the confidence of doing it. He was just awful first half. Second half, moved to right back. He was a lot better. So I stuck him down as a five.
Okay. Yeah, I've got him as a five overall as well. John, you got Jack Diamond.
Jack Diamond, I gave him a seven. I think he had a good game. I think he's raw. I think we all know he's raw. We all know he's got talent. But he had a good game. He did a lot. He did a lot more than we normally see from him. He had a lot more involvement. I think that's because you play to your strengths, and if someone's sort of having a good 5 or 10 minutes, you start pinging balls to them. But he was involved in a lot more than normal, and I think he's a real sort of star, shall we say, rather than the usual analogy of he's a diamond in the rough kind of thing. He's a real star coming through. I think we just need to bear with him a bit. We need to sort of teach. He obviously needs to be taught a few things here and there, but he certainly troubled their left backs. I mean, they changed their left back throughout the second half, but I'm not sure whether that was anything to do with it. But no, he had a good game, so I'll give him a seven.
Yeah, well, yeah, just quickly, I had him as a seven. Yeah, go on, Chris.
Yeah, just quickly, John, that Fleming you're talking about, he should have been booked first half for chopping Diamond cut inside, and he should have gotten a yellow card for that.
It was horrible, yeah.
Yeah, I had him as a seven as well. I thought he was very quiet second half, but his first half performance warrants him a seven. So I'll pick up Aidan McGeady, who I've also got a seven. Actually, without the kind of the flair that we associate with Aidan McGeady, I thought it was a very, very good performance. You know, he drifted in centrally all the time, looking to get on the ball. And actually, some of the stuff he did off the ball defensively, I thought was very good today as well. There's a couple of really, really good tackles he put in, really good stops. Probably not the type of Aidan McGeady that we're used to seeing. And probably not the type of Aidan McGeady that we actually needed today, because we were lacking in that kind of flair area, with exception on at times of Diamond. But I thought his performance was very, very good. I gave him a seven. And if anyone's got any different to that.
No, I only nudged it to a 7.5 a little bit, because I just found him, he was battling really hard. And he was, like you say, he was getting stuck in. And I've never seen that in him in God knows how long. So nudged it up to 7.5, but I was going to give him a seven.
Yeah. Okay, Chris. You've got my favourite player. I'm going to leave you with Charlie White.
So I got Charlie White. Well, we're going to have to decide what do the bottom kind of numbers mean? Is like one that he turns up? Is two that he puts his strip on? Is three that he makes it onto the pitch without tripping up or something? I don't know. I mean, how low do you go?
It depends if we're using the Charlie White scale or the normal scale that we judge everyone else against.
I mean, that's it. I mean, I mean, like you said, if he gets a couple of marks, GCSEs, you get like, what, two marks of writing your name correctly and stuff. I don't know if it's the same here, you know, that he...
Well, what you could do is give him as many points as he has for touches on the ball, because he has like three touches a game, doesn't he? So you just give him a three.
Well, that's it. I mean, I'll give him one for turning up the right stadium. I'll give him another one. I'll give him another one for putting his shorts on. But let's give him a two just for getting his strip on and getting out in the picture.
Oh, John, what did you have Maz, incidentally?
I had him, right, this is probably quite generous actually, but I had him as a four in the end because, and I wrote in my notes, I put, had two good touches.
that is not a benchmark for giving somebody a four.
The final bit I put was, he ran a bit more than I've seen him the last few weeks.
Well, I mean, Plumeneck, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he gets an extra mark for running. I don't know. Give him a three, then. But like I said at the beginning, I think Eve showed him how to actually be a striker in that first half. He had a kind of front row seat to see how a striker should act.
Yeah.
Hopefully
he's had enough of them. He won't have been watching.
No, yeah, he wasn't watching the ball. That's for sure.
No.
So I'll quickly blitz through the substitutes then. So I haven't rated Maguire, Embleton, or Graham because I don't think they were on long enough to really judge them, even though you could argue that they didn't really do anything and were probably fives across the board. But Lyndon Gooch, I gave a six. I thought he had a lot of endeavour, a lot of energy and enthusiasm, again, without necessarily creating anything, with exception of that cross that he put in, which our boy missed. Remy Matthews, six again, didn't really have anything to do and didn't do anything wrong. So that brings us to the gaffer. I've actually rated him as a seven. Result aside, on paper, the result isn't a terrible one. I didn't really watch the Northampton game, so I can't judge him against kind of keeping the same sort of team. But I thought the changes that he made showed some endeavour. I think on reflection, maybe that's a little bit too generous.
Yeah.
But I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm going to still say a seven.
I said six purely for the opposite reason of what you said. I think he should have made. I think he should have made changes sooner. But then the changes he made, whilst they're a little bit forced because of the positions that the subs play, I don't think Diamond and McGeady, one of them should have stayed on, I think, at that point. But yeah, what do you do in a different... I would have took off Leadbitter, but then a lot of people said that he was playing really well. I'd have took him off, put Embleton in the middle, and then left one of Diamond and McGeady on. But no, I think the subs should have been sooner. It was 75, 76 minutes, and I just think... I know we hammered Parky all the time, and I know he's already showed a lot more because he's chucking loads of subs on and he's really going for it. But sooner, man, sooner. Like, he could have, it started to be deflated around 60, 65. So make the subs then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, White could have gone off on 10th minute. So,
yeah. Or not at all.
Yeah.
Not started at all.
Yeah.
Chris, what did you have, Mr. Johnson today?
I had him down as a five because, like I said at the beginning, I just thought how any person can watch that Northampton game and then say, right, same again, lads. I don't get that at all. Something had to change. You've got to change it up. You've got to freshen it up and say, well, that didn't work that day. And Northampton were poor, and we didn't even come close to breaking them down. Didn't even look. Yeah. If we'd played all night, we wouldn't have scored against Northampton. So he needed to change it. He didn't. Yes, he tried it, but we're going back to kind of Parky time. Last quarter of an hour, finally makes a change. And okay, he made a triple substitution. I was with John. I don't know. I think at least one of the wide men, Diamond, McGeady, keep on. Diamond looked like he was second half. He was the only outlet we had to get some crosses in. And he looked like he was dangerous second half. Like John said, take Leadbitter off, go for it. Take your holding player out, go for a more attacking player in there. If you're going to go for the win, go for it. Don't just change personnel, but change the system that you're playing if we're not creating something. So. Bit disappointed with Lee Johnson, to be honest. Yeah. Got him as a five.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. I think I'm probably giving him the benefit of the doubt in that perhaps he couldn't have made as many changes as he wanted to because of fitness and sharpness or how much training people had done. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on that, having not seen the Northampton game. And maybe I'm still being suckered in by the fact that on 75 minutes, those substitutions wouldn't have been like for like. They would have been defensive in a Parkinson team. So maybe I've been seduced by that. But yeah, so that kind of rounds up where we're at the minute on 30 points, 19 games played, 3 points off of fourth place. That's how tight it is down there. But like I said, we no longer have kind of those games in hand. We don't have as many games in hand on people as we thought we might have 2 or 3 weeks ago. So still all to do, plenty of work to do in January as well, I think, from the transfer window, but that's probably for a discussion for another time. So the only thing I did want to just touch on, and it's been mentioned on some of the social medias, is the charity challenge that we are doing, or a handful of us are doing this season. So last January, John did something similar. But this year, a handful of us are trying to do 1,084 miles in January between us, which is the distance between Stadium of Light and Wembley and back twice. Seeing as Sunderland can do it twice, we're going to try and succeed in doing that where Sunderland failed in the times they went to Wembley. So far, as we stand, we're a third of the way through the month, and we're pretty much a bang on a third of the way through the miles. But what I'm here to do is plead for anyone who's listening, if they could donate, if you could go to www.gofundme.com/RR542. All the proceeds go to Calm, which is a campaign against living miserably, who provide services to help prevent suicide and combat depression. So it's a very, very worthy cause in what they do. They provide phone lines, web chat services, text services to people who do reach crisis point. So a very, very worthy cause. And we're all getting a little bit fitter on the back of it as well. So any support you can give would be very much appreciated. All that's left for me to do is thank you, Chris, for joining me.
No problem at all. Thanks, Bomber.
And also thank you to you, John, and keep those miles going.
Thanks, Bomber. Yes, please donate. Thank you very much.
Yeah, lovely. I can echo that. Please, if you can, anything that you can give, it would be very much appreciated. But we'll be back with an extra and to hopefully preview another game that's not been cancelled due to COVID. So until then, thanks a lot for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.